Now, XTC, the pop band, once said in their song Senses Working Overtime, we've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 senses working overtime. Not strictly true, XTC, as Emma Young in her book Super Senses tells us, and Emma joined us this morning. Hi, Emma.
Hi, thanks for having me.
You're going to mess up the entire lyric of that popular Beat Combos hit record now, aren't you?
I know, it's terrible, isn't it? But I'd also mess up, you know, all the teaching that happens in primary school. You know, my own kids are sort of 10 and 11, and they were taught a few years ago, as they certainly all are in the UK, that we have 5 senses, and these are the only senses that we have. And, you know, that really is not true. And this isn't me putting forward some kind of, you know, dream theory to get attention. You know, this is something that, you know, all sense scientists, anyone who works in the field, would completely agree with this. We have many more than 5 senses, and they just really have not been recognized, partly because of this teaching that happens in primary school.
It's almost like the 5 a day is good for you that somebody just made up at some point and everyone's just gone with it. Yes.
yeah that's about right.
Maybe we're obsessed with the number 5. Maybe that's what it is. Let's talk about the word sense, first of all, and senses. What is a sense as opposed to a feeling?
Okay, so there are slightly different definitions of senses, which is one reason it's been quite hard for everybody, philosophers, scientists, to agree on exactly how many we have, even though everyone knows it's way more than 5. But if you're talking about a sense, what you're really talking about is something where there's a receptor somewhere in your body, like the receptors that you have in the retina in your eyes that are sensitive to light, and they change in response to something that changes in the environment, whether it's out there or inside your body. And then it then sends a signal to your brain. It gives the brain information about what that change is that your brain can then respond to. Sometimes it just has to go to the spinal cord, but usually it goes to the brain. And then, because your senses are your interface with the world, your brain's locked away in the skull. Everything that we know about the outside world and inside, as well, the information that comes is through our senses.
Okay, that makes sense. And if you pardon the pun, and it would also explain why we thought there were 5 then, because it's pretty obvious that if we have an ear, eyes, nose, you know, tongue and fingers with touch. So where are the others coming from then?
Okay, so some of the others are sort of, I mean, the idea of 5 senses, just to point this out, it was developed 2,000 years ago by Aristotle, who was an amazing biologist, you know, as well as a great thinker, but it's 2,000 years old. So this idea that, for example, touch is, you know, a single sense, and for Aristotle, it included pain and temperature perception. But, you know, it's really clear that pain is not to do with touch. You know, you can feel pain inside you, and it's a whole specific, you know, sensory sort of system of receptors. But then there are other senses that are hidden away, and so it's sort of harder even to understand and be aware of, but they're certainly there. So deep in your inner ear, I mean, the ear is thought to have evolved, first of all, not for hearing, but for the senses that help you, your brain know where you are in space and help you to balance. They're sort of called the vestibular senses, and we use these all the time, like every day. Your sense of direction sort of depends, what people call it, sense of direction, depends on sort of signals from these senses. And then there are other ones like proprioception, which people, you know, don't hear of, and probably that's partly because it's got a terrible name. But it's about where your limbs are in space. And so if you close your eyes and you sort of raise your right arm, you know where your arm is. You can see where your arm is, and that's proprioception. But normally we're so reliant on vision, or humans that are so reliant on vision, that those other senses kind of fade into the background, and it's perfectly possible to become, you know, consciously aware that they're there, but they're just not as striking as, you know, as hearing or vision.
Interesting. I guess things like then feeling warm, for example, if it was sunny outside and you went outside and felt warm, that's a sense a thermoception, I'm guessing.
That's right. Exactly. So we have specific receptors that can sense, heat. I mean, I know you're in Spain, so no doubt you go outside and feel hot all the time and lovely compared with me stuck here in England. But yes, exactly. There are receptors in your skin. But what's really interesting, you know, for me as well about senses, is not just that we have all these different senses. We have receptors that respond to sort of different sort of swathes of temperature. So high heat, which is, you know, when you're very, very, very hot, or, you know, really scalding water, or the same receptors respond to chili pepper because the plant has actually hacked into our high heat sensing system to make us feel. So it's exactly the same reception when you eat a chili or a curry that's got lots of chili in it, that, as, you know, detect physical heat. But these kind of perceptions have all kind of influences on how we feel as well, sort of on our psychology, how we sort of interact with people, you know. And that, to me, is really interesting as well. It's not just about knowing that we, you know, have these senses, but it's about knowing that they have a big, you know, a big influence. So something like cinnamon, which we sometimes think of as a warming kind of spice, we use it, you know, obviously in Christmas, cinnamon actually stimulates the warmth receptors that tell you it's a nice warm day, you don't have to go and cool off, you don't have to go and find a jumper, you know, you're good, you're fine. And cinnamon stimulates those receptors as well. And that sort of is the idea then, is that that's why we've come to see it as a warming spice, because it literally almost is. And that can affect how you, you know, how you feel. It can affect how you feel in terms of your social life. You know, these things have all kinds of impacts, but it's just beginning to be understood on our psychology, as well as just, you know, giving simple information to the brain.
Another good one, and I'm sure this is a sense, is a gut feeling, which you know, we all know what that is like. Is that yes, down to chemicals in your guts effectively reacting in a certain way? What, it's often been said that people who are depressed, you know, that you have more of that particular hormone, yeah, in your gut than you do in your brain.
Right, okay. So I think that's talking about serotonin.
Yeah.
Right, okay. No, yeah. So no, I mean, so serotonin, you have a lot of serotonin in your gut, but it's not thought to influence your emotion. It's there as sort of what you call a neurotransmitter, and it sends signals between sort of nerves in your gut. But when you talk about a gut feeling, which, yeah, exactly, like you say, we're all familiar with, the way that works is that we have a specific part of our brain that responds to a threat in the environment. So if a dog sort of comes racing at you from the corner of your eye, that part will respond whether you're before you're even conscious of that sort of dog, seeing that dog. And it will trigger what's, you know, most people are familiar with, this fight or flight response,
yes,
where your heart rate,
yes,
rises, and, you know, all of that. One of the things that is involved in that is actually that blood flow is diverted away from digestion, because you don't want to be worried about digestion when you need to fight or run.
Okay.
And that will create what, you know, is called butterflies in the stomach. You know, you might feel it when you're anxious.
Yeah.
So what happens with what people call a gut reaction is that bit of the brain that detects a threat has spotted a threat, but you've not really become conscious of what that threat is, but it's still triggering all those changes. And you are then sensing the change in your gut, you're sensing the change in your heart rate, and you're feeling uneasy and having a, you know, maybe you've got a hunch about something, but your sort of the thinking part of your brain hasn't quite worked out why. But, you know, we know that these are, you know, these can be really important. So there've been some really interesting work on stock market traders in London, finding that people that are better at this kind of inner sensing, the traders that are better at inner sensing, make more money and stay in their jobs for longer. And, you know, they will often talk about having gut feelings about when to sell, when,
yes,
to buy, what to sell, what to buy. And it's thought that is what's happening. You know, it you can explain it, but you're just not quite aware of what's happening. You can explain it to somebody else. It's a bit of your brain that doesn't let you know exactly what's happening.
And some people seem to be better at gut feelings than others, which is interesting.
Yes, there's quite a lot of variation, which is really interesting. You get, so one of the classic ways of working out how good somebody is at inner sensing, and you can do it at home, is judging how accurate you are at knowing when your heart's beating, but without feeling for a pulse. And not when you've been exercising, you can really feel,
right,
the throb of it.
Yep.
But if you're just sitting quietly, and then if you sort of just close your eyes, and researchers will say to you, just, you know, guess, because you know you're not really feeling it, but just use a guess and try and count how many sort of heart contractions you have in a given period of time. And people who are better at doing that are generally better at this kind of inner sensing. So, you know, you can do it. You could have a friend actually physically take your pulse and count it over, you know, 30 seconds or a minute, and you in your mind try and count it yourself, and then just sort of see how good you are. But, you know, the thing with that kind of sensing, as with all our senses, almost all of our senses, is that with training, you can get, you know, you can get better. We're very, very adaptable with our senses. We can get better at smell, at inner sensing, you know, many, many different kinds of senses can be trained.
The heart is another interesting one that you alluded to there. And to quote yet another another song, Listen to Your Heart. If you're feeling anxious, then your heart is racing, isn't it? And what's going on there? You can feel
Okay, so that's... Yeah, you can feel that. So that's when... So that when I was talking about, say, you know, the dog racing towards you before you see it, it's the same process. So your brain is triggering that some kind of, you know, threat there. Now, that doesn't have to be a physical threat. You know, it can be a threat, like you've got this massive work deadline, or it could be a social threat. So we know that people will respond to sort of bullying or social exclusion with the sort of the pains of that kind of threat alert, but also the pain pathway in the brain, the emotional side of pain that you would get from if you stubbed your toe. The emotional pain pathway is stimulated when you have this kind of social pain as well. So, yeah, all of these things that are, you know, have evolved from, you know, through over many years, you know, to give us information that we can still use. And, you know, often we try and think that we need to, you know, think our way through situations. But I think that what a lot of the new work shows is actually listening to what your senses, paying attention to what your senses are telling you is really important.
Let's look at something slightly more esoteric, and this is something that I'm particularly interested in, and a lot of scientists would kind of go, well, it's not really science, is it? And this is people who can kind of tune in, who are more sensitive to, in a broad sense, they would immediately look at somebody and go, there's something about them I don't like. They get a thing, that gut feeling again, but it's a very specific gut feeling, isn't it? What's going on there?
It's very specific. So, I mean, there are ideas, you know, I can't tell you exactly. I can certainly talk about ideas. So you do get people who are more sensitive or less sensitive, you know, on all the different senses.
Yeah.
And, you know, and so this kind of, this, and that holds for everything. But for inner sensing, that really does hold as well. So like we were talking about, you know, being sensitive to your heart. So what happens is when you are presented with sort of another person, you know, we have evolved humans to be really quick to kind of make judgments about that person. Are they a threat? Are they going to be friendly? And the people who are better at this kind of inner sensing tend to be more responsive. Their bodies react more, and then they pick up on those signals more to what looks like, you know, could be a potential threat from somebody else than other people do. So I did interview, you know, a few people in the book, including one woman who's very sensitive in many different senses, like light, but she will talk about how she's just an emotional sponge, and she just has to be in a room with somebody and she just instantly knows whether they're sort of, she feels whether they're, you know, a threat, and she can't stand to be around anybody. And there are quite a few people who talked about that, people with different sensitivities. And I think, you know, it is valid. You know, maybe you won't be right all the time, but there, you know, there is a process going on there that scientists can understand now and explain at least partly.
Interesting. And I guess some people have, for want of a better expression, a gift. I mean, your book contains some examples, like a nurse who could smell Parkinson's disease. That's bizarre.
Yeah. I know, it's extreme, isn't it?
Yeah.
So, I mean, some people just have a much more sensitive sense of smell than others, and that's partly to do with your genes, but it's, you know, sometimes it's partly to do with how much you use your nose. You speak to any perfumer and they'll say that you can train a nose. But anyway, to go back to that nurse.
Yeah.
Yeah, so she was, her husband was eventually diagnosed with Parkinson's disease, and then she went along to a meeting. I think it was a Parkinson's Disease Society meeting, and she was aware that she was smelling a smell that she'd smelt on her husband way before he was diagnosed, on other people in the room. And she went and talked to there was a researcher from the University of Edinburgh at that meeting. She talked to him and said, you know, I feel like I can smell, you know, Parkinson's disease.
Wow.
And I've sort of spoken to him, and he went away thinking that crazy, you know, no way. But then spoke to somebody else who had somebody else say something similar, and they thought, well, maybe there is something there. And they've done a lot of research with this particular woman and found that absolutely she can. And it was quite remarkable, actually. They got her to smell, I think it was T-shirts that various different people had worn, and to try and work out who had Parkinson's and who didn't, or who was in the early stages. And she only made one mistake. She made one mistake and said that this person hasn't got Parkinson's. And at the time, this person had not been diagnosed, but that individual went on to be diagnosed with Parkinson's
disease. Oh, my goodness.
Specific she was. And so now a lot of work has been done to find out exactly what she's smelling. It's in sort of what's called the sebum, like sort of excretion on the skin, and you know, the actual chemicals that she's smelling have been identified, and they are now the research at University of Edinburgh with colleagues are working towards an early test for Parkinson's before obvious symptoms appear, based on those chemicals, the scent of those chemicals.
Well, we hear of animals, don't we, that can sniff out certain diseases with great accuracy. So why not humans?
That's right.
Yeah.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, some animals like dogs, clearly, you know, they've been used to smell cancer in blood samples, urine samples.
Yeah.
You know, there's quite a lot of work on that. And, you know, most of us don't use our noses. It's one of the senses, almost a fact of all of them, that researchers that are known about, that, you know, researchers would say, gosh, we really just don't use our sense of smell. We think it's poor. And actually, we've got an incredible capacity for smelling, people have. We just don't use it very often. We live in clean environments and...
Yeah.
We don't like bad smells. But if you avoid all those smells, you avoid training. And we don't have great words for smells in English. Other cultures do. You know, there is a sort of hunter-gatherers who've got countless words for smell, and their ability to spot different smells, tell different smells apart is amazing. And it can have a big impact on, you know, on your life. But yes, exactly. There's a huge extreme range within most people. And some people are just, you know, right at that end where they're very sensitive.
Amazing. Before we finish, I have to ask you the $64,000 question, which was included in one of the press releases I read for the book, which is, why does ABBA's Dancing Queen sound different in Bolivia?
Right. Okay. Yes, you were asking that question. That's fine. Okay. So it's to do with... So I'm not a musician, so you...
Okay, well, I am, so I'm fascinated.
Yes, yeah. I know. That's right. Right, exactly. So it's the octave-based system...
Right.
You know, is popular throughout Western music, clearly. That's what, not all, I'm sure, not all, but most music is based on the octave-based system. And
yeah.
There's this idea that if you sort of sing an A in one octave, and somebody else has got a different register, so they'll sing it, you know, higher or lower, but it'll sound like an A. So you could sing something like Dancing Queen together, even if you're not singing in the same register. Is that?
Yeah.
So far, so good. Right, okay. So the idea has been that because we have this... ability to see A and hear A in different registers as being equivalent, that's some kind of biological thing, that the ear is just picking up on the frequency of that incoming sound wave and, you know, seeing them as being equivalent.
Got it.
And it's been really hard to find people who've not been exposed to Western music to sort of work out whether that is biological or it's cultural. But there was work done with a group of people who were not had exposure to Western music,
right.
And they just did not get this at all. So if someone sang, I don't know, A C A,
yeah.
These people would sing back, they're called the Burinmo, they would sing back three notes that differed, you know, the first and the last would be the same, and the middle one would differ, the same level of pitch, but it wouldn't be, there'd be no consistency to where it was. So it wouldn't be, if you sang an A, they wouldn't be singing an A, it might be a B, and
how
then they go up from there, you know. So it's just about how culture sort of really has a big impact on what we hear, as well as biology.
Well, that's really interesting, because I have, unfortunately, or call it fortunate or call it unfortunate, something called perfect pitch. So if somebody sings something slightly out of a note for me, it's like somebody scraping their fingers down a blackboard. And when you go to other cultures, you know, like, for example, Southeast Asia, they may well have similar notes to us, but they're ever so slightly, microtonally, very, very different from our notes. And so to me, it's all a bit kind of... Yeah, I get that totally.
Yeah.
How interesting. So don't play Dancing Queen in Bolivia and sing along, otherwise you could be in deep, deep trouble. Brilliant.
Exactly.
What a fascinating subject. The book is great. It's called Super Senses. Emma Young, we appreciate your time today, and I'm going to have a word with someone I know in XTC and tell them that you've destroyed their career for them with senses working overtime. So you take care of yourself. Nice to talk to you today. All the best.